Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dr. Dan's weekly integration call. I'm Megan, Dr. Dan's sister, and I will be hosting the call today. Today's call will be 75 minutes, and we will cover some of the submitted questions, and Dr. Dan will speak on the theme for this month that covers one of the many aspects of full spectrum medicine. This call is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or the giving of medical advice. For questions or for more information, please email us at admin@drdaningle.com. Okay, let's get started. Dr. Dan, turning it over now to you to add anything before we dive in.
Awesome. Thank you, Meg. Good to be with everybody again. Thanks for taking out your time to be a part of our community so that we can share the experience of being together in the most dynamic time in human history that just seems to be getting more dynamic as the days go on. We took a week off last week, and it was a great week on my side. I imagine that there's a lot to catch up on that we could open up into the chat box for the community, because there has been a lot going on in the collective. There's been a lot going on in the field. And I continue to want to make these calls and conversations as interactive and available for people's connection, questions, engagement as possible. So let's carve out a little bit of time to do that at some point today. I think we'll stick with the flow. And if no one is needing to or desiring to be in the power seat, then we can use that time essentially for community connection time. And reflecting on where we were a couple of weeks ago, we were wrapping up a second stage or so in the conversation of happiness. And what does happiness look like as it relates to, connected to our months before conversation around suffering? And so if we see these two experiences essentially on a continuum, that the human experience is going to change from day to day. I don't know, maybe we should put a link into the chat box for the poem by Rumi called The Guest House. And essentially in that poem, Rumi says, this being human is like a guest house, every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some uninvited visitor comes as a temporary breath of fresh air, so to speak. And it's up to us to entertain them all, to allow each of the day's visitors to come in. And we get better and better and better at being able to have equanimity, to be able to have curiosity, availability, inclusion to whatever that experience is. Because that experience is something that's living within us already. And so whatever we get to do in order to claim with integrity, and with joy and compassion, whatever shows up at the front door of our life from day to day, the more happiness we're going to engender. It just naturally goes in that direction. The more we accept, and doesn't mean that we become a doormat. This isn't a passive level of acceptance. This is the recognition that our minds are the glorious gatekeepers of our own experience. And so when we have a perspective of self-worth, self-empowerment, an appreciation for the uniqueness and beauty that is in all of life, including us and including everybody and everything, then from that place, if we've really solidified our foundation of what we believe to be the core tenets of our life, we've talked about that in the past, that we have the opportunity to actually codify our own laws for living. When we do that continuously, and you feed it continuously, and this is an active practice, life will not happen in its greatest expression for your greatest outcome without your participation. It's very much going to require our engagement and our diligence and our discipline and our practice. Because all of that is what helps us rid the ego of the forgetting. And sure, it may be, because it's been said many times in different spiritual traditions, that life is school, and I very much believe that to be true, and that's why it's the third tenet in the laws of living that makes sense for me, right? Love is our blueprint, choice is our power, life is our school. And if it is life is our school, then of course we're going to forget that we're already great, that we're already amazing, that, as Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven lies within us. Of course we're going to forget that, because if you came in remembering, there wouldn't be any work to do unless you're just pure in service to help everybody else wake up. So if we come in to be a part of something, and part of that contract is forgetting our greatness, forgetting our glory, forgetting all of that beauty, then the diligence and the discipline and the practice is to train the ego to let go of the programming that was assumed in order to get that thing that it thought it needed, i.e. validation and worth, and to reprogram. And so whatever your law for living is, your series of laws, your maxims, as we do that and practice, practice, practice with diligence, as a student of our own life, showing up, pencil, notebook, front row of the school of life, ready to learn, engage, and when we practice with that diligence, then we hone the mind as it is the most powerful tool that we know in the known universe. Our minds are that. Our minds come from the same seed of creation that spawned all life. And most of us don't use our minds to one fraction of its potential. And so it becomes up to each of us, and this is how we take responsibility for our own lives. So Rumi's poem, The Guest House, is just this beautiful depiction of that. And in a way similar to Viktor Frankl's work in Man's Search for Meaning, when you know his backstory, then you know how he got to that place of unconditional love, which was his own hero's journey. So this last week for me was writing our entire manuscript, so to speak, our entire educational platform for Kuya, the clinic we're launching in Austin later this fall, that is our guide to transformation. And this guide to transformation takes the hero and the heroine's journey arc in our own contemporary expression of that and what it means to walk that journey stage by stage, step by step. So that's fresh on my mind as an invitation for you to recognize that the luminaries that we've all been inspired by. And what I mean by the luminaries, like the people that have really done the work, not the showmen, not the magicians that are showing their outer bright, shiny object with the secondary motive to sell something that's out of integrity. Not from a place that we would catapult ourselves into a guru role for our own primary gain. But the luminaries like MLK, Mother Teresa, Gandhi, we've talked about these folks in the past. These are people who have honed their own mind while opening their own heart, while going on their own hero and heroine's journey in order to come to this place like Rumi in the guest house to be able to invite whatever comes in, allow it to sit down, greet each at your door laughing and invite them in. Even if a crowd of sorrows violently sweeps your house clear of all its belongings, still treat each guest honorably, for each is a messenger sent from beyond. It's like a dozen or so sentences that just encapsulates this ability to be present and accepting of what is. Now that's the feminine. That's the love and appreciation for life itself. And the recognition too that life is chaotic, it's spiral, we can't predict it, it's not linear. It oftentimes gives us what we don't expect, as is the feminine archetype itself. And then we meet that also with the complementary masculine archetype, which is our warrior and our spiritual warrior. And I worry for love, and I worry for peace, and I worry for equality, and I worry for justice. I had this great quote like last week. It was something like, justice is love that happens in the public's eye. It's like, wow, that's a revolutionary reclassification for me. For justice. I've had a different impression of what justice was. And so we're talking about, like, in its exalted expression, in its best outcome, justice still has love impregnated. The legal system in our current society is very devoid of that quality. And most of our primary institutions are upside down from their best expression. Right, the political system could use an upgrade. Our medical system, our educational system, our penal system, our agricultural system, many of the systems could use these upgrades. That's why we do this work, so that we can start from within and then be warriors for change, of peace, of love. And if there is a wrongdoing, then we hold up the clarity and the kind mirror with compassion, saying that that wrong must now be made right, but we do it with a place of compassion and acceptance, because we too know that we have done wrongs out of ignorance, out of our own naivety. And so that's what is being asked of all of us at this time, is to understand what justice means and looks like, and how to hold people accountable for wrongdoings, but do it from a place of compassion, and do it from a place of strength, not from a place that is going to recapitulate judgment and violence. Because the more we're doing it out there, the more we're doing it in here, and vice versa. So it starts with self-kindness, self-compassion. Can we love all of the shadow? And come back to Rumi's invitation. Greet each at your door laughing. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival. You don't know what's going to show up. Can you greet each at your door laughing and invited in? And yes, we can. And yes, that's where we're going. Because that's the natural evolution of a mature consciousness. Is to be in love more and more and more with everything, to appreciate how interconnected everything is, and to remember that each of us have these primary needs and drives that's a part of the human condition. And when those are not met, there's a hole left in its wake that's hard to fill with one of the others. Right? So we started talking about that 2 weeks ago. Talking about the seven primary drives and needs of what it is to be a human. And I've shared that in a document that we'll share in the chat box that everybody will have access to. And last time I asked you a couple of weeks ago to just like let it sink in. Let's try on the possibility that there is a map for happiness based in the human energetic profile that's ubiquitous between all people in all cultures at all times, at all ages. We each have these drives and needs. They are fairly evolutionary, which means they grow like a house would grow. You start with a foundation and you add to it. And so the primary drive out of the seventh energy center is transcendence, whereas the primary drive out of the first energy center is safety and security. That's Maslow's hierarchy, built the same way. We just stand on the shoulders of the giants that have come before us. We recodify ancient wisdom traditions into a modern lexicon, into a modern delivery, into a modern understanding of how all of the ancient wisdom traditions make sense to us now and are applicable to us now. So very little, very if anything, new is created. Energy is transitioned, transformed. It moves from one place to another. Energy is not created out of nothing. I mean, we won't get into a physics diatribe, but that's essentially the second or third law of thermodynamics. Energy is not created nor destroyed. It's just moved around. And so if we realize that we're just evolving our understanding as it makes sense to us today, then this energetic system, this map of the human energy body, has been a map that's been used for thousands of years, right? So we have first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, starting around the root or the perineum and working all the way out the crown. And so when we know that we have this map of the human energy body, number one, safety and security, number two, creativity, number three, service and contribution, the solar plexus, number four, love and bonding, number five, expression and the authenticity of our expression, number six, wisdom and growth, number seven, transcendence, unity. There's a shadow and a light component to each of those. For example, if we're destabilized at the root chakra of safety and security, that the shadow aspect of that looks like scarcity. It means that we want to hold on to everything. Right? I'm in this one monkey suit for a short period of time, and there's only so many bananas, so get the heck out of my way, and I'm going to have all I can and maybe throw somebody else some scraps. That scarcity in action, very primal. Understandable, necessary. It's not the energetic is not good or bad. I say just light or dark or shadow because neither of those is either good or bad. One's just a different complement of the other. So in its light or exalted position versus its shadow or its challenged position, safety and security, when it's challenged, looks like scarcity. Safety and security, when it's ripened, when it's solidified in confidence and personal power, looks like abundance. So if we're, I mean, just if you can for a brief moment drop into the experience of living in scarcity consciously. Most of, cancel clear, there's a lot of us that are just living in scarcity, not conscious of it. And that's the first part of change, is to be conscious that something's out of balance. So if that might be the experience for you from day to day, moment to moment, or lifetime to lifetime, like if that's the majority of it, then there's like, let's get to work and appreciate that that's there and drop into the experience of scarcity. Even if that's not your norm, feel into that. And what does it look like when you start to lose something or something's threatened or something that you grasp so tightly to, that you love so much, that you cling to? Perhaps it's a way you identify yourself or you find security. Perhaps it's a relationship. When you cling so deeply and tightly to that, how does it feel when it's threatened? Or even more, how does it feel when it's not there? Or even more, how does it feel if it's not there and it's not coming back? That's the first law in Buddhism, impermanence. Well, the first law is this being human has some suffering connected to it. And there's a map. And Buddhism shows a map. And one of those primary pillars to get right with is that everything is impermanent. Life is impermanent. If you look at it from like the physicality, if you look at it from the expression of life continuing to generate new energetic profiles, then it's continuously evolving. Life's always refreshing itself. Everything in the universe is evolving. Everything changes. Hence, everything's impermanent. So when we can really just start to feel in what are the ways that we are scarce and what are the ways that we contract, that we hold on, like Yoda told Luke Skywalker. I mean, it's like, you can't, there's there's so many good quotes from Star Wars. Lucas was so tapped in. Yoda essentially invites Luke Skywalker to consider everything he's attached to, essentially saying, you must learn to let go of everything you most fear to lose. Not like abandon it, but get more and more right with the fact that it's probably not going to be there forever. And he also offers the second part of that, which is fear is the path to the dark side. I don't really get a sense that there's quote unquote evil per se by its own nature. I think evil is an absence of love, and it's a very solidified personality type oriented around scarcity, and therefore the need for manipulation and control of others to stabilize its experience of security while in physicality. And so if we come back to a recognition that we're all made of the same stuff, we all have these energy drives, we all have these needs and desires, we're all the same. So does evil exist in the world? Sure, to the extent that it exists in me and has before and will again. How do I get right with that in my own self? How do I own my experience of scarcity? How do I own my envy, my jealousy, my revenge, my resentment? I might as well own it and bring it into the conversation, into the center circle, so I can understand it and learn from it. If it's here now, I can learn from it now. If it was here in the past, then I can give compassion to anybody else who might be expressing it now, because I too was expressing it at some point in my own life. So this is how we just get better and better at finding happiness in our lives, recognizing that everybody, including ourselves, is doing only the best they know how to do at any given time. Right, so now let's compliment it. Now each of us just drop in for a moment. Close your eyes, take a breath, and anchor your own energetic experience of abundance in every aspect of your life. There's abundance overflowing in every aspect. Abundance in your relationships, abundance in your health, abundance financially, abundance in the physicality of where you live, abundance in the physicality of how you serve. What does it feel like to have a complement between scarcity and abundance, and which do you choose? Which do you prefer? And which do you have the conscious ability to help sanctify? Now, truth be known, so much of our personality is set by the time we're 5, 6 years old. So what if something happened pre-verbal or even ancestral, right? There's a good book, It Didn't Start With You. It's all about ancestral trauma, transgenerational trauma. There are times when we come in wobbly with our safety and security because of what was happening in our environment, or how we were or were not loved, or what was the sense of safety in the field around me. And so there may be some deep work to do. This is why we talk about medicine work. This is why we talk about integration. Because oftentimes the medicine work brings these issues to light so that now we can shine the light of our own conscious awareness on it, welcome it into the space like Rumi's inviting. Greet each at your door, including all the shit that you don't want to look at, including what was ever in the closet that just got like stuck away with all the old pairs of shoes and umbrellas that are torn and games that don't work and like everything else just goes into the closet. What happens when the subconscious closet comes barreling into the space, and how do we greet each at our door of awareness, at the door of our own heart space, and invite it in? When that happens, and there's a threshold moment where more of us is willing to do that than less of us. There's a moment we cultivate the practice to build our willingness, to build our resilience, to build our reservoir of optimism and faith in a rock solid community because it takes community living to live a joyful life. Some form of community, because in this fourth center, we're meant to bond. We're still talking about the first, but they're all connected. Speaking about them linearly is very artificial, but we learn linearly. So when we have an experience that grows through our practice, there's a threshold moment at which life now is carrying the dominant operating system that we choose to anchor and integrate into all aspects of our life. Or we might just recognize that now all aspects of our life are now operating with this new directive, and we get to sit back and appreciate the work we've done in order to cultivate that position. Life will not happen without your participation. So this is why we actually charge these connections in this Sangha, in this conscious community, with love first and foremost, and then with responsibility closely thereafter. Because we are, when we become responsible of our own lives, captains of our own ship, and we have maps such as this that help us recognize that the human energy system is very complex, and it's simplified around governing laws. Just like the universe is fairly complex, and yet when you look at the laws, they're fairly succinct and they're fairly direct. The Kybalion is a good example. Seven primary laws that govern the universe. And so when we can orient towards these laws and we have these frames of reference and we re-educate ourselves to take 100% primary ownership of our experience and our own healing, we invite others to support it for sure. We can't do this alone. And the more and more when we become empowered to do the sacred work that is our dharma, is our mission, because there's only one of you ever. And there will only ever be one of you. Therefore, there's only your mission through your experience and your genius and your brilliance and your beauty to do here and now. The best we are going to be able to serve that mission is to take full ownership of our lives. And then through that ownership, we can also do our work to make sure that we're not passing on to the coming generations our unresolved issue, trauma, shadow. So this is where it all comes into each and every moment. That's why Ajahn Shanti says enlightenment's not a light switch you just turn on. It's a moment-to-moment choice. And that's a radical degree of responsibility. Every moment is a choice. And so with these kinds of systems and these kinds of maps, and I'll continue if this is serving to go over this kind of map in detail. We only covered one of the seven centers and expressions that we could, through this map, go over. Or if you're content just having the map and reading it yourself, again, my commitment to the group is to be of service to the group and whatever the group consensus is desiring to have as far as material or sharings that we offer. So if this is jamming, if this is feeling good, then we'll just every week rock out another level. Or maybe one week we'll do a couple, or we'll just keep moving through the system. Right? We'll just keep moving through the system. And I'll assume that that's a, you know, assumptions aren't always good to make, right? Because they make an ass out of you and me. I've always loved that, that saying. But let's hold that as the working direction until the consensus would say otherwise. So I want to be mindful of our time. And I want to go ahead and make sure we have plenty of time for conversations, questions, power seat if anybody chooses. And if anybody doesn't choose to be in the power seat, then we can even have more of an interactive group conversation. So Meg, with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Great, thanks, Dan. So far, everyone, the consensus is a go-ahead on that.
Cool.
All right. So we are gonna do a little something different today. We're gonna start with one question and then we're just gonna open it up from there. So you guys, after Dan addresses this question, if you want to speak or you have a question, just unmute yourself and start speaking.
And then we'll just go with the flow that way and see how it feels. Okay, so this question is, I'd like to hear what Dr. Dan has to say about children and our future.
Whoa, cool. You have a bunch of kids, you love them all, but that sounds a little lofty. I'm not actually a parent, so I've heard that said, and I'm sure that's true, but I actually can't have a felt experience of it. I love all the questions that are sent. I particularly like the questions that are very direct, succinct, like, this is the money. And if they're long, beautiful shares, because life is unique and has a lot of twists and turns, those are all right too. But there's so much in this question that follows beautifully from what we were just talking about. We have the opportunity, more than our ancestors in recent generations have had, to wake the F up and to take full radical responsibility for every aspect of our life and demand that we as a society, a culture, and a global family take radical responsibility for everything that has not been resolved, that has not been metabolized, that has not been brought into the center of the circle because no one was paying attention or wanted to care, or it was really inconvenient, or it was gonna get messy. It's already really fucking inconvenient and really fucking messy, right? If you wanna look around, we are offered the privilege to slow down through COVID, to put our own house in order so that we can be of service to the collective, because it's an extraordinarily chaotic time, not because of the usual previous chaos factors that our ancestors had to deal with. This isn't a world war as we've known them in the past. Some people would use that term, but let's look at it as we've identified world wars in the past. This isn't World War I, it's not World War II. Right? It's not the Spanish influenza of 1918 that we thought was COVID was going to be. So it's not the war, famine, and pestilence that many of our ancestors had to absorb themselves into in order to solidify a root level sense of safety and security. So we're privileged with the opportunity to ask deep questions. How do we want to live as a humanity together in harmony for all the coming generations? So hence the nature of this conversation and this question. This is one of the cardinal reasons that we do this work, so that we can get current, get radically current with whatever is in our house that hasn't come to the present moment, whatever imbalances physically, whatever resentments relationally, whatever longings egoically, whatever disappointment spiritually, like whatever it is, like let's bring it current and get radically present. And there are very few tools that help the ego step aside as effectively and as efficiently as the medicines in order for the soul to speak of what's true here and now. Again, medicine work is not the only way up this mountain or down into this journey. When I mean down, I mean like the soul level journey is more downward into the subconscious arenas. The spiritual journey is more upward into the superconscious arenas. The soul is feminine. The spirit, our high self, as a connection to spirit, is masculine. We have these energetic bodies connected to consciousness outside of physicality. And that's how everything is one of the laws of the Kybalion. I mentioned that book before. One of the laws is polarity. Governs the universe. Polarities are equal, but they're opposite in degrees, which means like temperature, hot and cold are the same. They're both temperatures, but they're just on other sides of the spectrum. Everything, we too are made up of masculine and feminine archetypes. So when we get clear, when we drop in and we get present to what's happening below or outside of or greater than our ego's tantrums about its needs not getting met, then our soul has the opportunity to speak. Our soul has the opportunity to be heard. This is the exalted position. This happens in meditation. It happens during fasting. It happens during vision quests. It happens in the first pew of a Catholic Mass. It happens in isolation, in a dark room meditation without light. It happens in the throes of suffering when your beloved is just stormed out of the door saying he or she's not coming back. It happens everywhere because it's always a moment-to-moment choice to open up to truth. And the truth might be I'm having a really hard freaking day because my ego is just twisted out about something that it's not getting met. Or maybe I'm getting really current on something that's been there for a long time and I've avoided and avoided and avoided and now it's coming barreling out. Maybe my body's been expressing it. Chronic inflammatory condition, autoimmune condition. Autoimmune condition is the most accelerated next to psychiatric issues and neurologic issues. It's the most accelerated new epidemic. Autism has an aspect of an autoimmune condition. If you look at the way when you define autoimmunity, it means that the auto self is attacking itself. So it means the self is signal is putting out messages that something inside is out of balance, out of harmony, or even foreign. When we get right and present with whatever we've been trying to run from, it's not easy. It's not comfortable. That is happening collectively now. And it's happening so that we can relinquish responsibility of the coming generations to continue to drag on outdated prejudices, outdated prosecutions, outdated violent judgments. All of that is coming current. It's an old system of scarcity. It's an old system of manipulation. It's an old system of power-hungry ego structures acting out of security, acting out of their own scarcity of security, that they're trying to hold on to everything themselves and make everybody else wrong who threatens it. That system is dying. I forget who wrote that poem with the lead line, "Don't go softly into that dark night." And all systems go through transition. And most systems, when they're based in scarcity, will cling on the way out of the door. These are the resentments and the regrets that people have on their deathbed. I wish I would have spent more time with my kids. I wish I would have done more for other people. I wish I wouldn't have been so in a hurry. I wish I, all these regrets. And it's a horrible way to go. Let's die today to those regrets. Like bring all of those into the space. Write out your own conscious experience if you were to die right now. What it would feel like. Do that as a practice, as often as seems relevant, because that will help you get current on what you need to take care of today. And when we do that, when we're current, then there's less that we're carrying around, and therefore there will be less that we will burden our children with. The children coming in today are charged as we have been charged of this generation and the previous generation. I'm saying we, like we're all in this global generation, which is true to an extent. And we have borders and barriers that kind of, you know, where's the X generation and the Y generation? And it's like, hey, we're the human generation and everybody's got work to do. And so the young people now seem to be switched on to global issues in a way that I don't remember experiencing in my youth. I don't remember experiencing those kind of conversations that I'm seeing other young, like teenagers, young adolescents, young adults having fairly mature conversations about the areas that are out of balance and actually starting to hold our adult politicians accountable and say, hey, don't keep screwing things up. I'm going to have to clean up your mess after you leave. It's funny to listen to the generation of youth scold their adult kind of like teachers and taskmasters. And it's great to hear that voice of the youth and to serve that voice. Because in many ways, they can see it more neutrally than we can. We've already, as we get older and older, we get set in our ways. We get really used to our little conveniences. And some of our conveniences may have had negative ramifications on other people that were maybe just too inconvenient to address at the time. Again, the general maturity of an exalted, growing expression of consciousness is from the me, mine, and I to the us, the we, and the all. It goes from the myopic, I got to get on my bananas, I got to like take care of this, naturally to in like, how do we get to serve the collective? And it's not to make the I position wrong, because we also hold that as a dichotomy and as a balance. How do we serve the I while we're serving the we? Audrey Hepburn has, by the way, she's my favorite actress ever. It's like, every time I say Audrey Hepburn's name, I just have this right heartfelt appreciation of the innocence that beauty can be expressed as. Anyway, she has this awesome saying that something to the effect, and in her later years, she was quite the humanitarian. She says, when you get older, you realize you have two hands, one to serve yourself and one to serve others. And it's really that simple. So we serve the I and we serve the we. We make sure that we're taking care of our temple. We have work to do. And oh, by the way, life's not meant to be easy. It is meant to be fun. And so we have a lot of play to do. Like, when was the last time you just played with reckless abandon? If you have kids, probably more than you would have done if you didn't have kids. Because as adults, we kind of lose that. But if you see the centenarians, people in their old age that still have vitality, the common denominator among others, but the chief one that I've seen, because I've worked with a fair number, is that there's a playfulness. There's a glint in the eye. There's a little mischief. There's a little of that youth still present. And so it's important to balance our vocation with our recreation. That's what children help us do. We get to serve in both directions by getting current and working on ourselves first. Be the change you want to see in the world. There's a reason that Gandhi said that. Time is irrelevant. Einstein taught us that. Quantum mechanics has proved that. Time and scale are irrelevant. The source that created all life in the universe does not care about scale, because scale is just a measurement that our ego uses to try and tell the size of something, and usually therefore translate it whether it's better or worse. That's why in this society we live in, more is better. Bigger is better. It's maybe not, actually. And we start to peel it all back and we realize, because time is irrelevant, meaning we don't live in just a universe. The universe is linear. We live in a multiverse. You watched Interstellar and you saw that part in the Tesseract, where he goes into like the litany of innumerable potential realities that are sparking every single moment. I mentioned that too in a book that we've referenced a lot in the past, The Physics of God by Joseph Selby. Deep. It's a deceptively thin book. And however we break it down, there's things happening outside of just our ability to see and experience reality. We're likely only seeing and experiencing the felt experience of it about 0.00001% to maybe like 8% on a high side what's actually happening in the universe around us. That's not very much. Like radio waves, do you experience those? No, unless you're in your car and you turn on the stereo and you can tune the dial. But I don't experience that, but they're there. EMF, do you experience it? Some people actually do. Most people don't. But with more and more, we're gonna experience it more and more. Just an example. So in the multiverse, because time is irrelevant, what we do here has a way of affecting our ancestors. We actually get to heal what they've blessed us with the opportunity to heal on their behalf, because I tell you what, they may have taken karmic steps on our behalf by learning lessons that we didn't have to learn immediately in this life. I don't know what it's going to be like to get sent to war, but my grandfather did. And he came back and he was a different person. And everybody saw it. And he was always, from that point on, a bit angry, a bit closed down. They called it shell shock back then. We call it PTSD now. So what were your ancestors doing that you don't have to do now? Like, there's a mountain of gratitude that we're very thinly aware of, that we can offer our ancestors and bring their service to us with gratitude, and also bring their trauma to us with gratitude. Because, by the way, they didn't have a lot of the same tools that we have now for consciousness. And, oh, by the way, the coming generations will have even more access. So the more we clean up now, the more they're free to be who they are. Connected, great, brilliant. They're going to help if we can leave them unburdened by our troubles. They're going to help immeasurably rebalance so much of what's happened in the collective, physically, emotionally, mentally, energetically. They're going to help rebalance all of that in some form or fashion, because that's the natural iteration of evolution. And if they don't, if we burden them worse than we are now, like we don't get our shit together, and we burden them more, then it's going to need to, the amount to rebalance is going to be even higher. And oh, by the way, if we have crossed an inflection point, we're actually, you know, life as we know it's going to have to significantly change because global climate change is a real thing. Maybe we're not around for that much longer. It doesn't, however you want to spin it, the future is unknown. The past is actually, to a certain degree, irrelevant because it's not happening now. We give it our reverence. We give it our grace to make it sacred, to honor the ancestors. And when we do that, we become more current in our ability to be thankful for everything that's here and be responsible for what is ours to do. So I think the coming generations are going to be impressive. I think they're going to be brilliant beyond our expectation. I think they're going to be charged with a requirement for ingenuity, potentially in a way we haven't seen. We've had over the last 100 years the decadence of an abundant technological landscape to pretty much do whatever we've wanted. Thankfully, we haven't afflicted nuclear war, but that is within our capability. We've created all kinds of really cool stuff to the extent of the environment, to the extent of racial harmony, to the extent that it has negatively impacted every other species on the planet. I mean, we have our own reckoning collectively to take care of. So potentially that's what this is also offering us with COVID. So I'll take a pause because that one question took all the time for our questions. And I thank you for continuing to write in questions. I thank you for continuing to write into the chat box. This is what helps our conversation stay current. Otherwise, it's just a lot of like fluff unless it's usable. And the best way for any information to be usable is that it's current.
Thank you all for saying yes to this work and for your willingness to go deeper. As always, it is a pleasure to spend this time with you, and we look forward to seeing you again next week. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter, if you haven't already, on our Full Spectrum Medicine website. We would love to stay in touch. Thank you all so much for joining us, and we wish you a beautiful, happy, and healthy week ahead.